I guess I have to agree with this analysis. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, Vice Chairman of our Institute, my fellow analyst and good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And we'll just see if I agree or not.
Well, honestly, I think that we're probably going to both end up agreeing with this. Not simply because the person who's writing the article that we're going to be talking about today happens to be someone that I think that we both have had some intersection with in the past and have appreciated the way that they look at things. I'm not saying that they look at things perfectly. None of us do. But in these areas, this person usually has all of their ducks in a row. The person we're talking about, Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum. And the analysis that she's put out was in an article that was published, republished in townhall.com magazine on the 12th of this month, titled National Popular Vote is a Bad Idea. And I'd be the first to say I couldn't agree more with Phyllis Schlafly that this idea of the national popular vote is a really, really bad idea for the continuation of our constitutional republic.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, I guess we do agree. No, this is just a terrible idea. The entire design of the Constitution, the entire reason that the Constitution exists is something called proportional representation.
We hadn't gotten to that, we wouldn't have a Constitution.
Well, the basis of the actual acceptance of the Constitution was what was called the Great Compromise. And the Great Compromise involved the acceptance by the large populous states of equal representation or proportional representation, actually, in bodies like the Senate and in the executive branch with the smaller states. And in fact, what it required was that, for instance, that the rural interests be equally represented on the basis of numbers with the urban interests in the country. Let's take it for instance. As it stands now, if you just simply do a popular vote for something in Ohio, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus can essentially clear the decks.
That's right. Because the centers of population are much greater in those three metropolitan urban areas than they are in the rest of the state combined.
But when you break it up into its representative districts and vote that way, and actually give people in the rural areas a shot at it, what you get back out of that looks vastly different than if Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus simply ran roughshod over the rest of the state. And this is exactly what the founders had in mind when they did proportional representation, both in the House of Representatives, even though that is a far more democratic body than, say, the Senate, and the executive branch, which is elected by a proportional representation, or is supposed to be elected by a proportional representation system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I've done in the past, I've taught a class on the Electoral College called The Electoral College, Original Intentions, How It Is Broken and Why It Still Works. Despite the fact that we have been dismantling the system for over two centuries, the fact is it still works because we still have a proportional representation system, despite the efforts of those who would have us go to what we're going to talk about today.
Right. And that group is called National Popular Vote. It's a group that seems to be heavily well-funded, and they have started out on a program, Chuck, to get states to change the way our elections are held. And they're doing in such a way to say that, okay, what we're going to do is that no matter which candidate wins in your state, whoever gets the majority of the votes nationally, your state then has to give their delegate votes to that candidate. So we're doing away with even the idea of the electoral map of getting to 270. By saying, okay, if somebody can work all the urban areas and get a huge majority in the urban areas, well, then they deserve to get all of the votes for president and be the president because the urban areas have spoken. Places like San Francisco and New York City and Chicago and Dallas, Texas, and other places who honestly, Chuck, have their own interests at heart and will be voting for people who are going to promise the cities a gravy train.
Well, and that argument exactly mirrors the argument that was given in 1787 at the convention. The argument was basically between, really at that time, was the populous, large populous states versus the small states like Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, versus New York, Virginia, and I'm trying to remember what another one of the more populous, doesn't matter. It was those states versus the small states, and there would be no constitution if the states like Virginia had not acquiesced to the wishes of the small states. And the reason was there are vast differences in the interests between sections. For right now in our country, I think you and I both know, as we the example we just laid out, the interests for, let's say, you go to somebody in maybe in Xenia or in Urbana or in Newark, are they the same as someone in Columbus or Cleveland or Toledo?
Absolutely not.
I'd say absolutely not. There are vast differences. People see things differently, and yet those people could very easily be broomed out and their voices not be heard because they can't muster enough support under a direct vote system to have their voices heard. But in a proportional representation system, their voices have to be heard.
You see, but that's the thing that people don't understand, Charles.
Oh, that's right. They just simply...
that's the reason why, as national...
People have decided that getting together and having the loudest voice possible to drown everybody else out is a good thing, rather than having a true national debate and a true national representation of all voices is a much better thing to have. This basically two possible answers to any question, and you're either on one side or the other. The idea that there may be multiple answers to a question and somebody else may have a better idea has simply flown the coop. And that's the idea behind this national vote thing, this direct national vote, is it's going to further entrench the two-party system, something that actually needs to be dismantled in this country. We need to think seriously about going to a multi-party system to cover more viewpoints than are being covered. But you had something important to say, I think, as well.
Well, what I was going to say is that the vast majority of people don't understand the idea of proportional representation and why it gives them a voice. And that's the reason why when National Popular Vote is going out there and they're running polls, the polls are showing 70% of the populace want to for the president. Well, you know, if we look at that and we go back to the year 2000, that means that Al Gore becomes president of the United States because he won the popular vote. It also means that we would have candidates who win the office of president by gaining mere pluralities of the vote, because National Popular Vote's structure is such that it isn't that they have to get a 50% plus one majority. They just have to get a majority of all the votes cast. So if there are, say, let's say there's six different candidates running for president, and you get down to candidate A gets 15 million and candidate B gets 14.9 million, candidate A wins, although candidate B won his votes in states that had more electoral votes. Now, what they're trying to do, and they've been successful so far, in nine states, they have had this bill that says that once they get enough states on board, that all these states will flip their systems to where they require that it be by popular vote. They've got nine states already, Chuck, who've jumped onto this: Vermont, Maryland, Washington State, Illinois, New Jersey, the District of Columbia, who does have three electoral votes.
And shouldn't.
Massachusetts, Hawaii, and of course, California. They're halfway there, Chuck. They've already got 132 of 270 electoral. They've got states that represent half of the number needed, almost half the number needed, to win the electoral college.
And this illustrates the stupidity of the system, because most of those states, what is required in the bill is that the electoral votes be cast regarding the national majority, not the state majority. In other words, if the majority goes Republican in the country, but the majority is Democrat in California, if their bill is constructed this way, and I don't know if it is, then the California electoral votes would be rewarded to the Republican Party.
If they had the popular vote, yes.
In the country.
Not in the state, nationally, yes.
That's right. In the country.
That's
now,
right.
If you ask me, this is a doubly stupid system. Now, I'm going to tell you why it's doubly stupid. A, the states, the only vestige of state sovereignty they have left is in the Electoral College. Not only have those states given up the right to award their electoral votes in the way they see fit, because they've just basically seen fit to turn it over to the rest of the country, they're not only allowing their state voters to override the majority in the rest of the country. So again, it's a 1-2 punch. And essentially, the 1-2 punch is being delivered by the California state legislators and the other states to their constituencies inside their home states. And I think most people where those bills have been passed don't understand that. I don't think they know that that's one of the tenets of the bills that have been passed.
The point is that this group is harping on, and they're using the logical fallacy of an appeal to fear and an appeal to inclusion, because their whole theme is every vote equal.
It's a bandwagon appeal.
Bandwagon approach, yes.
Every vote equal. Well, the only way to make every vote equal is a proportional system.
But that's not what they're selling here. And they've got, like I said, they've got nine states who've already passed it. Ohio had introduced this bill, amazingly enough, back in the 2008 legislative session. And I took a look at it. And honestly, Chuck, in Ohio, that bill, this was during when the Democrats controlled the House. It was co-sponsored by seven Democrat members of the Ohio House of Representatives, and it never got out of committee. And it has not been brought back up in the subsequent two sessions of the Ohio General Assembly. So obviously in Ohio right now, and we'll keep you informed if this ever changes, the Ohio legislature doesn't think national popular votes all that great of an idea. But again, some of these people who were supporters in 2008 are still members of the chamber, and at least two of them are now senators, Ohio state senators. So we could see this thing crop back up at any point in time in Ohio, in either chamber or in both chambers of the legislature.
Well, Barry, here's unfortunately the way it's going to work. The next time we have a close election, every time we have a close election, this pops up. Or if we have one of the rare elections where the popular vote does not match the electoral vote, everybody screams about how the popular will has been thwarted. In fact, the popular will has not been thwarted because the proportional will has been served. Now, what we should be doing, and unfortunately, we're going to run really short on time here on this. What we should be doing, Barry, is doing true proportional representation, and that is by awarding electoral votes on the basis of the vote inside of a congressional district. That was the original plan.
Yes,
it was
the original plan, yeah. And you know what? We still do that, Chuck. We're looking at
states.
It right. No, we're looking at it right now when we're talking about the primary elections, because what's happening is delegates are being delivered to candidates based upon how those candidates did in those districts, because they have to file slates of electors in each of the congressional districts. If folks remember, here in Ohio, Rick Santorum was going to lose nine potential electors because they had not filed the paperwork in three of the state's congressional districts, including mine down here in what is the sixth district right now, but is going to be changing, I think, to the second. But anyhow, that's the whole point is, we're still doing it intra-party during primaries, but when it comes to the general election, people are like, no, we can't do it that way. We've got to go by popular vote or winner-take-all of the entire state, which, honestly, that's not how the founders intended. You're absolutely right. So getting back to what works point would be to not do national popular vote and not do winner-take-all, but to do what Maine and Nebraska still do, which is awarded by congressional district.
Exactly. We did a show on this, Barry, and I think maybe I'll see if I can't remember where it is in the archives and put a link to it. So you can, we did a 1-hour show on a Saturday on the Electoral College. I think it was our second Saturday on the air, actually. It was a very interesting discussion, I think. And I think we'll put that up so people can go back and listen to it and see if our arguments don't make sense. Unfortunately, as always, when we get into one of these interesting programs, ding, ding, our time is up. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.